How many of you have already gotten Valentine's presents? Boy, not very loving. Nobody's hands went up at all. Do you remember back in the day when you used to get those little boxes of candies with the sayings on them? Do you remember those? They were all just one massive packed piece of sugar. I remember that much when you ate them. But they had all kinds of sayings on them. Do you remember some of those? Be mine. You're in my heart. Hug me. I remember when I was in elementary, I thought, I need to give that to a cute girl, but I was way too shy. First kiss was one. Wow. I might have gotten that wrong. It might have been mom if you turned it upside down. I don't know. I'm not really sure. Call me. Real love. And then they had a heart that just said yes. I don't know. I don't know how that worked. Smack. I assume that was a kiss, not any other kind of smack. Be true. Be true. I hope some of you get some of those. Linda and I didn't coordinate, but these are just kisses. So just take your kisses and be satisfied with that. Thank you again for those, Miss Linda. That's wonderful. Doesn't she do a great job? I'll tell you what. Give her a little hug, too. This week, their furnace went out at their house. They picked a good week for it to go out. It was fairly warm, but it was the furnace needed some TLC, some love. So they got tens of thousands of dollars worth of love for it. So all of those Valentines, do they still... Man, I got to get to the sermon sooner or later. It's here. But do they still make those boxes in elementary school and stuff Valentine's? Stephanie's nodding her head, yes. So they still do that. I remember thinking, I'm going to send Valentine's to that kid that picked on me on the swings. But, you know, you did. Everybody got a Valentine. Do you remember that? I think the Valentine card companies are the ones that make out on that one because all the elementary schools have to go by. And I'm off track here. But is that about love, that Valentine's thing and that whole business? And you know that Valentine was a priest, and he would often sign his missives, his letters to people. He would send encouragements, and he'd say, be my Valentine. And that's kind of how all of that got started. That's my understanding. We're hoping that that's true and not some myth on the internet. But that's there's different loving that's going on, the love of a sweetheart and God's love for us. We've talked about this over the last several weeks. They're not the same thing, really. They are, but they're not. I mean, love of sweetheart is different than God's love for us. It is, but it isn't. You know how I'm confused with that. But I have to tell you, I never hesitated to coo sweet nothings into my beloved's ears or to say I love you to a beloved one of mine because I felt unworthy. How about you? Did you ever feel like you couldn't celebrate Valentine's Day because you have feet of clay? Maybe that's not something we think about on Valentine's Day, but... You know what's funny is I believe that United Methodists, and we're probably not the only ones, but we focus most on our feet of clay and our failure to be perfect than a lot of other denominations. I don't know that to be a fact, but from what I'm hearing from some other denominations, they don't care much and don't worry much, and it's all right to sin because you're forgiven. But I'll tell you one thing I do know, and that is that this denomination and others like us, we're called the frigid Christians, okay? Because, you know, we just don't talk about it much, and they're it's a long-standing tradition. I knew some Presbyterians that I had known for years and years. I never knew they even went to church, and they didn't know I went to church, so maybe it's an indictment of both of us, huh? But I've asked people over the years why we don't talk about our faith And why don't we share God's love for us and express it as that same love that we offer to others? I usually get a response. The first one is usually, I don't know my Bible very well. Now, I don't know all the biblical terms. I don't know all those churchy terms, ecclesiastical phraseology, epistemological, existential, you know, all of those big $9 words. And so being not well enough informed, I'm hesitant to speak out. I hear that. And I remember thinking when I started seminary, I said, this is going to be great because I'm going to get all my questions answered and I'm going to figure out all those funky words and I'm going to have it all straight. Do any of you watch Jeopardy? Oh, most of us have. That's kind of interesting. You know, it's always amazing to me is that when they have a category around Bible trivia, it humbles me every time. You would think, I've been doing this for a few years now, 1986, you do the math. But you would think that by now, and having read through this lovely book numerous times, that I would be fairly good at a trivial, Jeopardy category around Bible or what have you. They do manage to pick some trivial things, but, and it's in the King James, which is not my version, so that's my excuse. But we are hesitant to express ourselves to others because we don't want to have to admit our mistakes. But we own our mistakes, and we have our mistakes, and we are a people of unclean lips. We have sinned. How can we tell anybody about God if we're not worthy? How can we be the one to share that? Most people in the pews, and I remember being in the pews thinking that I shouldn't be sharing Christ with other people. The pastor should be doing that. But the amazing part is that you get more done from the pews than I can ever do as a pastor. Once somebody knows I'm clergy, once they know that I'm a preacher of a church, there's a certain set of walls and barriers and mute buttons that go up faster than you could shake a stick. Where did that saying come from? We'll do an essay on that next week, all right? We are not worthy. Now, I want to just reflect on that. I've met some wonderful people over the years. Think about that. Think about some of the most wonderful people you've met and had a chance to be around. Now, I've met some amazing and wonderful clergy, preachers, bishops, awesome people, just amazing, wonderful, awesome people. And there have been humans in my life that I call saints. How about you? People that have touched you, that have been the saints that have been models for you. But none of them are perfect. I hate it when I figure that out. I met Bishop Sano, and I was early in my ministry, and I was in awe and gaga, and he is worthy of a lot of adoration in the sense that he has made some difficult journeys. But meeting him in person and talking, and he's a human being just like me. And I met his wife, and there's something was going on. It was kind of humorous. You know how a couple sometimes there's some disagreement going on, and you talk to them and you can tell they don't say anything, but you can kind of tell that they're having a little bit of lover spat there. I don't know none of you couples have ever had lover spats, so, but there was a little bit of a tiff going on between the Sanos, and I remember thinking, you just fell off the pedestal, Bishop. So I've never met anybody perfect except Jesus, and I had a parishioner in Johnstown, Charlie Williams. He says, there's never been anybody perfect except Jesus. Doesn't mean, as I've mentioned before, that we're not moving on to perfection. We're not trying. We're not working our best. True? Yes? 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 Okay. Need to kind of double check on that one. But here's Isaiah. Man, what a prophet. What an interesting individual. Woe is me, I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. That's an interesting statement to me, because somehow being surrounded by people of unclean lips might influence our ability to be in the presence of the Lord. That's what Isaiah is worried about. He says, I'm going to stand before God and... Oh, goodness, I am a man of unclean lips. We are all people of unclean lips. I can't speak for all of you, but I would be willing to bet on it. I'm not a betting man either, but we know that we are the pots, not the potter. So Isaiah says, I'm in trouble. God is going to speak to me, and I'm... a sinner. And an angel, what did you call it, Diana? A seraph? What is it? What was the scripture say? A seraph. I don't know my angels all that well. They're not a biblical thing as much as what, anyway. Takes a live coal from the fire with a pair of tongs. I would think angels could grab coals without being burned, but that's just another thing that just worries me is in the back of my mind. But the angel takes that live coal and touches it to Isaiah's lips. Now that this has touched your lips, you are made clean. Now, they don't do that anymore in the hospital. It's a wonderful thing. We don't have to sear this or use hot coals or whatever. There was a time when that was the only way to stop infections or sometimes severe bleedings. It was a hard time. It was effective for its period, I guess, but other than seeing that in TV and movies, it certainly doesn't happen anymore. Now we have penicillin. Unless you're allergic, or antibiotics, or antiseptics, and we have ways of trying to help prevent infections. It was not long ago that surgeons would do surgery in their street clothes. They did not even know that they were infecting their patients just by the impurities they were bringing. So here comes this angel and symbolically purifies Isaiah's lips. Your guilt has departed and your sin is blotted out. Honest repentance. Gosh, we could have that. Don't you think we should have something in the church where that's the case, that we recognize? And if we are truly remorseful, I mean, I have made some mistakes in my past. At teenage years, I did some teenage things. And I'd like to forget them. I'd like to apologize for them, what have you. And wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to be forgiven? The Lord's Prayer was just a minute ago, wasn't it? Forgive us our trespasses as we have trespassed against others. And if we are truly remorseful, we are forgiven. Why don't we accept that? Why don't we allow that? And there's a certain part of us that by not accepting God's forgiveness, that we're sinning against God. So now we have guilt over having guilt and having our guilt removed. Don't go down that path, but accept that fact that when we are honestly remorseful, when we really wish we hadn't done it, we can be cleansed of that. That's not a license to sin again. It's not a license to say, I can get away with this and just go to church on Sunday. I've heard quite a few people who argue, well, I don't go to church because that's the deal, is people go out on Saturday and sin and then go to church on Sunday and confess. And they think that's an okay lifestyle. I don't know people like that. I'm sure there might be some, but that's a criticism perhaps worth noting, a criticism of religion. But if by chance we do, we determine that we're not going to do that thing that we hate, and like Paul said, the very thing that I hate is the thing that I do. And if you do it again, can you go back to the Lord's Prayer and be forgiven again? How many times, they asked Jesus. Not seven times, he said, but seven times 70 times you have to forgive each other. Seven times 70. He's talking about as many times as you can number. He's not saying exactly, 140 times. He's saying as often as your remorse is true and you come for forgiveness, you shall be forgiven. So there's Isaiah. And he's come forward, this man of unclean lips, living amongst a people of unclean lips. And there's a certain part of that. The Bible told the people, don't associate with those others. And the Jews, the Hebrews, built up walls around themselves, walls of community that separated them from everyone else. Don't associate with Samaritans. Don't be around women unless they're escorted. All of these barriers to try and fence in the Bible, as it said. And it took Jesus to talk to them and explain those barriers have prevented you from being able to love each other. So we have to be about being a people who are faithful, even amidst people of unclean lips. But Isaiah's sin is taken away, purified by the hot coal. And then, quote, then I heard the Lord of the voice saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? And I said, here am I, send me. We have that hymn in our hymnal. Here I am, Lord. Is it I, Lord? That one, you remember that one? Send me. And what are we to do when God sends us? Simon Peter, they're on the beach. They've been fishing all night. They haven't caught anything. And it's after the crucifixion. They've gone back to fishing because the revolution's over. The movement of Jesus has come to an end. They have nothing to do. The movement's gone. And they're fishing, and they're not catching anything. And they've been up all night trying to fish. And Jesus appears on the beach. Have you caught anything? They know, not a thing. He says, put down on the other side. And they start to pull on the nets. They're too full. They can't get them in the boat. There's so many fish. They can't eat. They're just awash with fish. So they get to the beach, and Jesus has started breakfast for them. And he eats with them. And he drinks with them. Symbols of true human bodies. You see, spirits can't eat and drink. So he here is resurrected in the flesh, and he eats and drinks with them. And they know who it is. They haven't recognized him. That's one of the hallmarks of many of Jesus' movements, but they know that it's got to be him now. And they're finishing breakfast, and Jesus pins down Cephas, Simon Peter. Looks at all the fishermen, all the disciples gathered there, and says, Simon, do you love these? I love these, Lord. Yes, you know I love these. Good, Jesus. Good. Feed my lambs. You bet, Lord, whatever. Don't know what that means for sure, but yes, Lord. Simon, do you love these? Now, Simon, yes, Lord, I love these. feed my sheep. So he asked him a third time, Simon, was it three times because Simon denied him three times? Many theologians think that's maybe why Jesus did it three times. But the third time he asked him again, do you love me more than all these? You love me more than them. And Simon Peter, now he's got his full attention, and man, he's crushed. Lord, how can you ask that? You know me, you know my heart. You know that I love you. Feed my sheep. That loving that we're called to. This is Valentine's. This is the time of feeding sheep. This is the time of loving one another. How do we do that? It's going to vary. Some feed sheep by preaching. That might be me. That might be Nalu. That might be Mark on occasion. Some of the other preachers gathered amongst us, we'll see who those are. Melba has done a fine job feeding some sheep. Amen. Some feed the sheep by teaching and educating. Have you had teachers that were teachers of both their subjects, but also of a morality of love and care and compassion and acceptance? Some feed through working with food banks or through donations to food banks or through givings to missions or works that help reach out beyond their own hands. And some go on mission trips. How many of you have been on a mission trip? Not a lot of us, probably a few. I've been on three. It was wonderful and it was horrible. I mean, it was horrible to see the state of people in third world countries and to know that how much we have and how much they don't have. But it was wonderful to see and to feel their love of us coming to try and help and for our ability to try and do something and for the people that supported us going on those trips. Feed my sheep, God says. It's going to be up to each one of us how we do that. It may be merely you loving that neighbor of yours that's hard to love. Or maybe that in-law who's an outlaw. Loving them unconditionally as God has loved us. Here I am, Lord, send me.